Hi, I'm Jonathan from Chicago.
Hi, I'm Kristen from San Francisco.
I'm Evan from Silver Spring, Maryland.
Bullseye with Jesse Thorne is produced independently and supported by listeners like you and me.
You should support the show like I did. It's easy.
Just visit MaximumFun.org/donate.
I'm Jesse Thorne. I'm talking this week to Keegan-Michael Key and Jordan Peele. They're the stars of the new Comedy Central show, Key and Peele. Jordan does a pretty amazing Barack Obama impression. You might have seen it on the internet. And I think it's grounded in something that's maybe a little more insightful than just a study of how Obama's voice sounds.
I do hear it subtly when he's talking to, you know, a group of African Americans, you know, and it comes in sort of black people, it's sort of the form of almost a twang to it. You guys know, you know, you kind of sort of channels MLK or something.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is.
You know.
And his timbre changes a little bit, and so does his voice goes up.
His voice goes up,
You can see him. I mean, I when I hear him talking that way, I kind of feel like he's like, oh, this is going to be fun.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah.
I think, well, you know, he always has a little smile on. You know, he knows he's with friends. He knows he's with family.
It's Bullseye. This week, Key and Peele talk about their comedy beginnings on Mad TV, impersonating everyone from presidents to weathermen to gang members on their new Comedy Central show, and an absurdly complicated card game that Jordan Peele designed himself. Plus, I face down a gaming obsession of my own, and the brothers McElroy solve listeners' pop culture quandaries on our My Brother and Me segment. It's all coming up right here on Bullseye. Let's go. Every week on Bullseye, we check in with some of our favorite culture critics to get some pop culture recommendations for stuff that is worth your time. And we are joined by a couple of real favorites from the AV Club, assistant TV editor Eric Adams and contributor Claire Zolke. Eric, Claire, welcome to Bullseye.
Thank you.
Thanks.
So, Eric, let's start with you. You're recommending this new drama on NBC called Awake. First of all, tell me what the premise of this thing is, because it is pretty premise intensive.
It's probably the most premise heavy show that is debuting in this among this crop of mid-season replacements. It's about a police detective who survives a car crash and wakes up to find himself split between two realities where in one reality his wife survived the crash and his son died. And then in the other reality, his wife died and his son survived.
Here's a quick clip from Awake. This clip cuts between those realities, and Isaacs has a different psychiatrist in each one. I think you'll be able to tell what's going on by hearing that.
Whether I'm with my wife or with my son, it all feels completely real to me.
You mean you're not sure which is a dream?
Meaning you can't tell whether you're awake or asleep. At this very moment.
Incredible.
Of course, I'm awake. I'm awake with my wife, and I close my eyes, I open them. I'm awake with my son.
Well, I can assure you, Detective Britton, this is not a dream. What?
It's exactly what the other show said.
This sounds like the kind of television program that sounds really good to a television executive in a meeting, but maybe doesn't work as well as a TV show on a week-to-week basis, right?
Yeah, it's an absolutely fascinating premise. It's definitely something that Kyle Killen, the creator, who also created the very short-lived, much-loved Fox series Lone Star, just probably like sold really quickly in an elevator. Like, hey, I've got this great idea. They're not giving him a very good chance of survival. They've slotted the show into the 10 p.m. Thursday night slot after all of the comedies that night. And that slot has already eaten 2-hour-long dramas this season, First Prime Suspect, and more recently The Firm. It's a show that's going to need to find an audience immediately, and unfortunately it has a very alienating premise.
Is the show good?
The show is good. It's I love it.
I've never heard someone be so tortured about saying that they love something.
Well, the thing is, the way that Awake delineates these realities and, you know, deals with these issues of grief that Jason Isaacs' character is experiencing is just, you know, it's unlike anything that's on TV right now. And I really hope people give it a chance, but I don't have high hopes.
Claire Zuehlke, your pick is a very different kind of television program.
Yeah, just slightly.
Called RuPaul's Drag Race. Yes. It's in its fourth season on the Logo Network. This is a reality competition show hosted by America's most beloved drag queen, RuPaul. And it is a contest to become the world's most famous drag queen,
America's
I guess.
America's next drag superstar, actually, but close enough.
Latrice Royale. I see the Beverly Hills, Billy.
I'm blinking. I'm feeling beautiful. This is the sheer elegant side of Latrice.
I think Latrice has a Cable Ace Award up her sleeve.
Or she's just happy to see you.
Uh-huh.
So, I mean, one thing that's nice about this show, just right off the bat, is that usually these shows are competitions to become some sort of terrible person, and they're hosted by terrible people. And RuPaul is actually pretty pleasant.
Oh, my goodness. RuPaul, he appears both in drag and out. Either way, just the kind of host that you want to spend time with. My husband will occasionally watch it with me, and he's not exactly an aficionado of gay culture, but he'll always say, he just seems so nice, and that's exactly how you feel. He's like, you know, he's got a Tim Gunn vibe to him.
So tell me a little bit about what happens in the program and what makes it so enjoyable.
Well, what happens is almost secondary to what makes the show so enjoyable because, you know, the challenges that the contestants get put through are so ridiculous, and they embrace that. They're really just silly challenges, like they had a professional wrestling challenge. They had one where they were filming infomercials for RuPaul's album, which was a nice wink, you know, not a very purposefully unsubtle way of selling RuPaul's songs.
Ladies, gather around. Remember, you need to connect with the TV audience. Make them laugh, sell some product, and pitch your heart out. Oh, and one more thing. Don't f*** it up.
And there's sort of a borscht belt humor to it. RuPaul, I don't think, has ever sashayed away from a pun that she didn't see. So I think it's one of those shows that, without preachiness, is engaging straight America a lot more with gay America in a wonderful way.
And it's very self-aware about reality show trappings, right?
Oh, definitely. Like, one of my favorites was that RuPaul used to have dinner meetings with the contestants, and the meal would be a single Tic Tac. And he'd always talk about how full she was after she had one.
Claire Zuehlke recommends RuPaul's Drag Race in its fourth season on the Logo Network. Eric Adams says you should check out the new NBC drama Awake, which premieres this week. Eric Adams, the assistant TV editor of the AV Club. You can find the AV Club online at avclub.com. Claire Zuehlke, a contributor to the AV Club. She also writes the Zuehlke blog for WBEZ, which you can find online at Zuehlke.com. It's Bullseye. I'm Jesse Thorne. The three brothers McElroy host the MaximumFun.org advice podcast, My Brother, My Brother, and Me. And from time to time, they join us here on Bullseye to help solve some pop culture quandaries sent in by our audience. Justin, Travis, Griffin, how are you?
Doing great.
Good.
Happy
how are you?
Here.
We have some just absolutely tremendous questions that need your expert or, frankly, inexpert guidance. Why don't we get straight to them? Here's a question from Katie. She's wondering about movie and concert posters. Are they acceptable to put on the walls of an adult's apartment or house? Sub question, what if they're framed?
I would say, as a man who once had Ace Ventura When Nature Calls poster on his wall, not movie posters.
Not a goof. Not a goof. For radio. I still have a a tombstone poster hanging up in my wife's office because it helps her to think. That's not a joke either. But that's a great movie. What if you have a poster for a bad movie and you didn't know? That's the worry that you run into. Oh, comic book posters are straight out, by the way. If you have a picture of a super team, I don't care who drew it. Get it off of there.
You say that, and I'm staring at my Superman poster.
No, but it's Alex Ross.
It is. It's beautifully
okay because
done.
It's Alex Ross.
It's artwork.
I think that the poster maybe has to be from a movie that came out before you were born. It has to be an original poster, not a reproduction, and it should probably be in a foreign language.
Yeah. All those are great criteria. I would also suggest that it not have been made in Photoshop. It had to be – if it was drawn by a real-ass man or woman, then it's a lot more acceptable, I think.
And don't use poster sticky tack because it stains the walls.
There's no poster that can go up on your walls as an adult without a frame, right?
Got to frame it.
Definitely not.
Can you put posters on outside walls? Just to like let people know that like you are coming into a Doug Flutie enthusiast.
Abandon all non-Flutie ye who enter here.
Well, what you have to do is when you put on a movie in your house, you have to put up a now showing marquee outside.
Oh, that's great.
With each passing idea, this is sounding less and less like the home of an actual person and more like an episode of a show on HGTV. Maybe something
that's
where
just called,
the...
This show's just called Help!
I did it wrong.
Here's a question from a user on our forum who goes by Concrete Tales. He is wondering whether he can tell his now 4-year-old daughter that the shows that she likes, especially Dora the Explorer and Thomas the Tank Engine, are awful.
They actually rebooted it. They rebooted Thomas. Now he's just Thomas the Tank. That's a way cooler show.
Yeah, it sounds awesome. It's your fault, dummy. You think the 4-year-old is like calling the cable company and subscribing to these channels and buying DVDs off of Amazon? Stop giving him bad things. At this point, you've lost him. He's closer to Dora and Thomas the Tank Engine than he is to you.
When your daughter's like, hey, I want to watch Dora, I want you to say, ooh, instead, let's watch Downton Abbey.
Yeah. Your 4-year-old's going to love that.
It's time to grow up.
At this point, if you try to take Thomas the Tank Engine away from your baby, they'll put you in a home. Maybe at the rate adults are going, you're going to start getting put into adult care facilities at around 50. And your child will put you there if you try to take Thomas away from her or him.
I would say you're probably better off just pretending like they never existed.
Oh, that's great.
That's good.
Break the DVDs and be like, what? Dora the... A talking train? What are you talking about?
Won't they be traumatized by you trampling all over the line between fantasy and reality, sort of like me when I watched Return to Oz?
You were the kid that had to hide behind the couch whenever TikTok came on the screen, weren't you?
Oh, man, I was so afraid of TikTok.
It's like a fat metal genie. I hate that guy.
I was afraid of everything in that entire movie. Why did I watch it?
It's a horrifying movie. When I was a child, I was afraid of the HBO logo they would show before movies.
Absolutely true.
That's 100% true. I was terrified of it.
And the robotic woman from Superman 3.
Here's a question from one of our forum users. His name is Dandy Fellow. I presume that's not his legal name. That's the name he uses on the forum. Is it in good taste to approach a stranger because of a book they're reading or a band that they're wearing the shirt of or any other sort of public consumption of a thing that you like and support?
The t-shirt? Yeah.
Yes. That's what they're inviting with the t-shirt. They're hoping that they're showing their support. They're flying that flag. They're hoping that someone will come to them and strike up a conversation.
The book, though, that's their time, you know, like, hey, I'm enjoying this thing and relaxing with it, and now you've come over and stopped me from doing that.
If you ask someone about the book they're reading, what you are saying to them is, I forgot to bring something. I did it wrong, so now entertain me. That's all. I didn't get a book so I could hopefully strike up a conversation with some people.
Who's handing out books?
I was in St. Louis when they was handing out books in Chicago.
I was trying out some of that Red Snapper in the dinner cart. Oh boy, that's better than you can get back home.
Something that irks me for reasons beyond my comprehension is when people say, oh yeah, I read that. Like, strangers say this to me. Like, I was on a plane reading Game of Thrones, and he said, oh, I just finished that. As if they're just bragging. We get it, man. You're literate.
Would it be better if he was like, I've never read that. I can't read.
That make you feel good?
Nobody says that in the tone, like, oh, let's start a book club. They always say it like, this book was a race and you lost.
Justin Griffin and Travis McElroy are the hosts of the advice podcast, My Brother, and Me, which you can find for free in iTunes, Zune, or whatever podcasting software you'd like to use, or online at MaximumFun.org. Gentlemen, thank you once again for joining us on Bullseye.
Thank you. I hope we helped.
Coming up in just a second, Bullseye gets as close as it ever will to covering the events of the day as Jordan Peele will reveal how to do a really good impression of President Barack Obama. It's Bullseye from MaximumFun.org and PRI, Public Radio International.
Production of Bullseye with Jesse Thorne is supported in part by the menswear blog Put This On, presenting the Put This On Gentlemen's Association. Members receive a handmade pocket handkerchief in the mail every 60 days. More information at putthison.com. And by Ask Metafilter, thousands of life's little questions answered. Online at ask.metafilter.com.
It's Bullseye. I'm Jesse Thorne. My guests are Keegan-Michael Key and Jordan Peele. The two met as cast members of the sketch comedy show Mad TV on Fox. Now they star in their own show on Comedy Central, Key and Peele. Both Keegan and Jordan are biracial, and they don't shy away from it.
Keegan and I both have white moms.
Yes.
This is true. We have white moms. And the thing about having a white mom being a black guy is, as a kid, a white mom can't hit a black kid in public.
Can't do it. Can't do it. Gets too racial too
fast.
That's
right. It escalates. It escalates to this racial thing. And I became aware of this at a very young age. I think my mother spanked me once in the grocery store.
Uh-huh.
I swear to God, Keegan, you know that tear that Denzel Washington does in Glory? Yeah. When he's getting whipped? That's what I did. And I promise you, just instinctively it came out of me. This is what I did. Just hit me like you're my mom in the grocery store. I said, Mama, don't you hit no black boy's booty.
But to characterize Key and Peele just as racial humorous would be a mistake. The show's fueled by a combination of their fierce comic skills and a genuinely distinctive voice. Here's the sketch that they chose to open their series. Keegan and Jordan are both talking on their cell phones and walking down the street, and we hear as they, well, let's say, modulate their voices slightly as they pass in and out of each other's earshot.
Because you're my wife, and you love the theater, and it's your birthday. Great. Unfortunately, the orchestra is already filled up, but they do have seats that are still left in the dress circle. So if you want me to get them theater tickets right now, I'm going to do it right now.
What's up, dog? I'm about 5 minutes away.
Yeah. Okay, yeah, cool. No, they're all good singers.
Yeah, son.
Mm-hmm.
Nah, man, I'm telling you, man, I'm about to cross the street.
Nah, they got that one dude in it that you love, man. He going to be in it, yeah. Yeah,
come on, man. You know I'm almost there, all
right? Right, no, I'm going to pick your ass up at 6:30 cool. Then. Cool. All right. Yeah. The parking's free. So they got that
unlocked.
Oh, my
God, Christian, I almost totally just got mugged right now.
Keegan, Jordan, welcome to Bullseye. It's a pleasure to have you on the show.
It's a pleasure to be here.
Thank you, yeah.
I want to talk a little bit about your comedy backgrounds in a minute, but I thought that was such a perfect sketch to open your first episode with because it is one of the running themes in your show. Mm-hmm. It is that act of translation, that act of cultural translation. That both of you guys, as both of you are multiracial, both of you have one white parent, one black parent, must be sort of comfortably fluent in by breeding.
Yeah, yeah. I think there is a culture, like a cultural fluency. We're bilingual. Like we are bilingual in a way, and or bi-dialectical, if you want to say. And we just figured the only way. I mean, there was no other way to do the show because it's like there's a new comedy out there that we think that can be explored and be new and be hopefully innovative and hopefully something that riles the brain a little bit.
You know? It's also something that informs, you know, why we do what we do.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, we've perhaps being a mixed background, you know, we sort of liken it to sort of walking a tightrope at different points in our lives. And at certain points, it feels like we're between two worlds or we're part of two worlds or we question where our world is. So I think that in itself had something to do with the fact that Keegan and I sought out sketch comedy, an art form where we could literally be chameleons.
There's this thing that a lot of comedians have, which is that there it was some point in their life where they felt outside, mm-hmm. and comedy was the thing that they felt like could get them back in. Whether it was, you know, and often it's just something simple, like something physical and, you know, schoolyard-y, like they were short or skinny,
mm-hmm.
or something like mm-hmm. that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, I was not short. I've, in fact, for me, the problem was that I was tall,
uh-huh.
but I was definitely skinny. And so, and really uncoordinated. And the only thing I wanted to be in the whole world, and I'm a little older than Jordan, all I wanted to be was Lynn Swann. And you know, he was, for everybody out there, he was a wide receiver for the Pittsburgh Steelers in the 70s. That's all I wanted to be. Could not catch a football.
We should explain for public radio listeners. He was
football.
Sort of the Henry Kissinger of wide receivers.
Yes, exactly. I love this already. That's exactly a great way to describe him. But yeah, it was a lot of teasing. It was the schoolyard teasing. And then when you fall down and somebody laughs, you discover that salve. That everybody goes, oh, he ain't that bad. And mm-hmm.
Well, you grew up in Detroit, too. That has to be a
rough. Yeah, that was
a rough one, you know.
What was the cultural and ethnic context in which you grew up outside of your families?
Well, it's interesting. For me, I thought, as a child, I certainly thought that there were more black people in the world than white people. But this is the way I speak dialectically. I've spoken like this since I was a child, but I always just assumed there were more black people than white people until we drive to Illinois and visit my family in this farming community in northern Illinois. And it was this magic place. And it just didn't really occur to me until maybe I was like 7 or 8. I'm like, so I guess all the white people live in Illinois where there's hills. And all the black people live in cities, but I live in a city, and when I watch TV, those are cities. So there must be more black people than white people. So I lived in a city that was 85%, when I was a kid, 85% black.
You figured that white people lived in scattered settlements.
Exactly. They lived in villages.
Right.
Yeah, right, exactly. They lived in little cities.
They were like a nomadic people.
Exactly, yes, yeah. Like Bedouins, like really light-skinned Bedouins. And for me...
Churning butter from town to town.
Taking their horses and taking goods to each other. And so I lived in the cultural makeup of my city was like 80% African American. We had an African American mayor. My father was African American, but my father was a different type. You know, it's not a secret that African American life and culture is not a monolith. And that has a lot to do with our show as well. But, so that was my makeup. I imagine, Jordan, that you grew up in a more cosmopolitan place than I did.
New Yorkers.
Yeah.
My experience, you know, I was raised by my mother. My dad really wasn't around through that. So I always sort of put my upbringing probably into context of like Webster or Different Strokes, where, you know, for some reason it was just sometimes that happened. Sometimes white moms had black kids. I always knew she was my mom. I didn't think I was adopted or anything, but, you know, that was sort of the...
And you understood where babies come from.
Eventually. And if you have any more knowledge answer that question, I'd be interested to.
If anybody out there doesn't know, it's gross.
We'll talk. This is a family radio program, so we'll have to talk about this later.
Okay.
But I'll draw some pictures for you. And in fact, I've got some pictures in my bedroom underneath my mattress.
Already?
Yeah.
How did you know?
Yeah.
Was it unusual for you particularly, Keegan, to leave the context of a city that's 85% African American and be all of a sudden, rather than be seen by the world as that mixed guy or that light-skinned guy, as be the black guy?
You know, for me, it's funny. Jordan and I have talked about this a lot in the last week. I have always... No, I shouldn't say always. For the most part, have identified myself as a biracial person, much to the chagrin of a lot of African-American people that I meet. You know, because it's like there's a betrayal, almost like an intrinsic betrayal. Don't do that, brother. We need you. We need you here in this form.
Why you got to make that distinction, though, brother?
Right, yeah.
It's why like, you have to make that distinction? I don't understand, brother.
It's always educated, brother. It sound like that. It's like, I understand what the distinction makes sense. And please don't say the word mulatto. That is an antiquated term. You know, and it's just like, but the thing is, he and I voraciously love our mothers. So where do they fall in the equation? If I'm supposed to be an African-American, where does this little white woman who gave me my life, and I'm adopted, which is a whole other story about sacrifice. These women did so much work. Where do they fall in the equation? And I think that's something that is something that really informs why we do our comedy the way we do it.
Now, I have my whole thing has been fascinatingly different in that I've always – thought of myself as a black comedian, African-American comedian, African-American man, everything. And, you know, looking at it now, because it was easier. That's, you know, that's what people see. That's what people expect. That's what I am. So there's something about doing this show that has been cathartic, something about it that's been very scary and felt almost like I'm coming out as biracial in a weird way. Obama's a huge part of that, feeling like that was okay, and watching African Americans' acceptance of Obama and pride in him has been a huge part of that, and encouraging, you know, hey, wait a second, yeah, there's more to the story than that.
It's Bullseye. I'm Jesse Thorne. My guests are Keegan-Michael Key and Jordan Peele. They star in the new Comedy Central program, Key and Peele. Jordan, you mentioned President Obama. I want to play some of this sketch that has been a huge viral hit for you guys. This is you doing an impression of Obama while Keegan does this. We'll let the sketch explain what happens. I think it does it pretty well.
Good evening, my fellow Americans. Now, before I begin, I just want to say that I know a lot of people out there seem to think that I don't get angry. That's just not true. I get angry a lot. It's just that the way I express passion is different from most. So, just so there's no more confusion, we've hired Luther here to be my anger translator. Luther?
Hi.
First off, concerning the recent developments in the Middle Eastern region, I just want to reiterate our unflinching support for all people and their right to a democratic process.
Hey, all y'all dictators out there, keep messing around and see what happens. Just see what happens. Watch.
Also, to the governments of Iran and North Korea, we once again urge you to discontinue your uranium enrichment program.
Hey, Mahmoud, Kim Jong, I think I already done told both y'all, 86 your s***, I'm gonna come over there and do it for y'all. Please test me and see what happens.
On the domestic front, I just want to say to my critics, I hear your voices. And I'm aware of your concerns.
So maybe if you could chill the hell out for like a second, then maybe I can focus on some you know?
That goes for everybody, including members of the Tea Party.
Oh, don't even get me started on these motherfuckers right here.
This sketch is so loaded. this sketch
it's
has
layered.
So much content.
There is.
So much going on in here. let's start with the impression of the president.
Yes.
I think that Bill Clinton was the first president to have a I'm talking to white people voice and I'm talking to black people voice. But I think Barack Obama being biracial has earned it a little bit more.
Sure, sure. In his actual white people versus black people voice, I do hear it subtly when he's talking to, you know, a group of African Americans, you know, and it comes in sort of black people, it's sort of the form of almost a twang to it. You guys know, you know, you kind of sort of channels MLK or something.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is.
You know,
and his timbre changes a little bit, and so does his voice goes up.
His voice goes up, does it?
Yeah.
You can see him. I mean, I when I hear him talking that way, I kind of feel like he's like, oh, this is going to be fun.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah.
I think, well, you know, he always has a little smile on. You know, he knows he's with friends. He knows he's with family.
Yeah.
And I almost equate it with he lets himself off guard a little bit. He lets himself off of presidential production because, he feels familial about it. But I think it's probably subconscious.
And that presidential production is a very much a racially charged presidential production, because part of what that presidential production is about is saying, I'm a black guy you can trust.
Yeah.
Yo, well, I mean, he's got to. But, you know, one of the great things about Obama is, you know, you really get the impression that he is sort of, he looks past and farther than race, and that he has sort of consistently refused to engage that discussion, almost as if to say, look, man, you know, I'm president. You know, this is something that, you know, Martin Luther King didn't even dream of necessarily. So there's a point where discussing black and white has its limits. It's more complicated than that.
It sort of reminds me of these cultures that have third genders, where the third gender gets to do a lot of stuff that men and women don't do.
Right, right.
Where where the president gets to do stuff that he couldn't do as a white guy or as a black guy.
Mm-hmm. He's it's like the most successful hyphenate. I mean, we're the luckiest guys in the world.
That may be a stretch. May be stretching a little.
But there is something, you know, as we were talking about, you know, there's something about not existing in either world. But, you know, when we're at our best, we're existing in both worlds. And that is a special power in itself. You know, we...
It's a good way of putting it. Yeah.
Yeah,
it's, well, you said that also there's this culture and then there's this culture and there's this tightrope that we walk. But the tightrope itself is a culture. Mm-hmm. And that's what we want viewers to examine.
Jordan, can you tell me a little bit about how you came to your impression of the president?
Well, it was pretty much a technical analysis for a long time. Just watched him trying very hard, you know, to say exactly what he says after he says it. That's the first step. Step two is anytime somebody brings him up, you got to swallow your pride and try and do it, even if it's bad. But
wait, just like in public?
Yeah, just in public. People, you know, hey man, Obama. Yep. Well, Obama. Somebody call for Obama.
You're saying that one of the key ingredients of any impressionist arsenal is the shamelessness of doing an impression in public whenever anyone says that person's name?
Look at impressionists and see how many people they have around them at any given time. It's not a lot. We are obnoxious people.
I think anyone who saw that show, The Trip, it's basically a treatise on the idea that impressionists feel obliged to do impressions whenever the name comes up and alienate everyone around them until all that's left is one other impressionist that they're friends with that they're alienated by at the same time.
That's the way to work on impression. And working with Frank Caliendo and Nicole Parker on Mad TV, two of the best impressionists of all time, sort of, you know, helped me with different little lessons. One thing that Nicole was very very good at is you learn where the noise is coming from. You know, when you make a sound, it vibrates in a different part of your body. So for Obama, you had to sort of first figure out that, well, it comes from his diaphragm, sort of like a proper singing strategies to come from your diaphragm, but then it's also up in his nasal passage a little bit. So when I put those two together and then purse the mouth a little bit, all of a sudden he starts appearing, and then, practice.
Stick around, more with Keegan-Michael Key and Jordan Peele of Key and Peele in a minute. Jordan will even tell us about a card game he designed. He made his own cards and everything. Plus, I've got a gaming obsession of my own. Has a video game ever been so good that it tears you away from everything that's important to you? Or everything that used to be important to you before you discovered that video game? Well, it happened to me. I started playing a game that rhymes with Skyrim. It's Bullseye from MaximumFun.org and PRI, Public Radio, L'International. Bullseye's on Twitter. Follow us at twitter.com/bullseye.
Hello, fake radio listeners. I didn't see you over there. This is Judge John Hodgman relaxing in his chambers. You know, I've resolved the greatest moral conflicts of our time, like the potluck problem, snob versus slob, and of course the toot dispute. Do you have a pressing issue that needs swift, decisive justice? Visit us at www.MaximumFun.org/JJHO. That's J.J. Ho for Judge John Hodgman. And hear the results of each case on my weekly podcast, Judge John Hodgman. You can subscribe in iTunes or find it online at MaximumFun.org. This is the sound of a gavel. That is all.
It's Bullseye. I'm Jesse Thorne. My guests are Keegan-Michael Key and Jordan Peele. They star in the new Comedy Central show Key and Peele. They first started working together on Mad TV. Here's a sketch from that show. Keegan and Jordan are playing gang members fighting over their turf. Jordan resorts to some unusual fighting tactics. You can't see it, but Keegan will explain it on the tape.
Hey, you tell Beauchamp to meet me at the Lafayette Underpass, okay? Hey, and he better bring that suitcase, too. Now go!
Well, well, well! What do we have here? I believe I gave you 24 hours to disappear, yeah? Well, I ain't bouncy!
Yeah, I specifically gave you 24 hours to get out of town, and here it is 48 hours later, and you still standing here. That's disrespect.
Well, I don't care what you call it, all right? Because I'm like a rock, son.
Oh, you like a rock, huh?
Yeah,
you
like I'm a rock. I don't move.
Okay, then let me understand this correctly. Then you are like a rock, and a rock don't move, huh?
Rock moves. Okay, you know what? You need to be a little bit careful about what you be pushing, all right? Because the laws of physics clearly state that an object you might push might come and push you back.
Okay, so you want to do this now?
Yeah, I want to do this now.
You want to do this right here, all
yeah,
right?
Yeah, let's
come
do
on,
this.
Let's go,
let's
man.
Go.
Let's go. Grab my ass.
God's about to kick your ass, man.
You didn't kick it, don't grab it.
Okay. Come on, man.
Come on, man. Let's
yeah,
go.
Let's go.
Let's go.
Yeah,
man.
Let's go.
What? Did it again.
Did what?
You grabbed my ass.
Man, I was doing no such thing, man. That's wishful thinking.
What? You guys worked together on Mad TV. Which was a very long running and critically maligned television program. I've interviewed a number of really brilliant people who worked on Mad TV.
Sure.
One of the things that I learned in interviewing people about Mad TV that I was really surprised by was I learned that the audience at Mad TV was composed. Substantially of actual teenagers.
Yes. Oh yeah.
Like
oh yes.
Like, what?
Oh yeah.
I did a sketch comedy show once for teenagers when I was doing sketch and it's hard
for teenage. Oh yeah.
Because
did you try farting or making a fart sound.
I mean, the thing is,
frequently
is there is just you just have to do a lot to get to a teenager.
Oh,
it's not
yeah.
because teenagers are any less not because teenagers are any less bright or engaged than anyone else. Mm-hmm. They just have a lot of defenses up.
Absolutely, mm-hmm. yeah.
And so, essentially, what you can do to get to a teenager is punch them in the face with something.
Right. You have to, yeah. Or yeah, because if you completely disarm yourself, they'll attack.
or you can appeal to ultimately the bully in teenagers. You know, what teenagers are ready to laugh at is the misery of other people.
Teenagers.
Safety in the herd, right?
Steady diet of Schadenfreude.
You'll notice Mad TV didn't really pull punches when talking about certainly celebrities or people like that. And it was, it was right for the Scott Farkases of the world.
I mean, it was
Christmas story reference.
Christmas. Yeah, that's right. The Farkas. Yeah. Literally like 13-year-olds, 14-year-olds, people who I would have thought wouldn't have been allowed to watch the show were big fans of the show.
There were a lot of things about Mad TV that are inherently very difficult and maybe ill-advised. I mean, in its inception, it was something to compete against SNL. You know, the greatest sketch show of all time had a 30-year head start. So when that's the DNA of the show already, it's not Mad. It's cracked TV. You know, it's
no, that's a great way of putting it. It's not Mad, it's crack, because it's like Mad prehistorized. What I was about to, you know, it was a progenitor of
I know
SNL.
The word you're thinking of, but I don't know it.
But it came before SNL. But the thing is that refinement that you would have assumed might have come. I just said refinement and Mad magazine in the same sentence. But that historical context couldn't be used. There was no way to make it work.
Keegan and I had pitched several times, I believe, that we were obsessed with somehow updating Spy versus Spy.
Yeah.
And doing like,
they just didn't. They were not interested in it. You know, they were interested in just destroying celebrities. And that was the stuff that was most popular on the show.
I remember I interviewed Andy Daly, who I think might be the funniest person. Andy Daly was on Saturday, on Mad TV for several years, and he told me that as his years on Mad TV went on, I think he was on for 3 years or something like that.
Yeah.
He became increasingly obsessed with this sketch pitch he had for it was a sort of behind the music style sketch about the world's greatest straight man. And he became more and more obsessed. He would repeatedly pitch this sketch because he realized that he was appearing in all these sketches that didn't have any straight men. just everyone was being crazy at each other.
He's awesome. He's so good. Well, and we pitched a sketch where both of us were straight men.
the salesman sketch.
I mean, our mustache sketch.
Oh,
it's not us.
Right.
It's what's on our faces. That's the comedy of the scene. Right. Of the scene. Three times we pitched the sketch, didn't do it, and then we finally did it online, and then it got a very respectable number of hits online. It's just like that. They wanted. You can find, if you go back, I mean, it takes a lot of work, but if you go back and look at Mad TV, there were lots of lovely sketches tucked in amongst a lot of the popular culture stuff. And as long as we were feeding the beast, they were going to keep making the popular cultural stuff. But I mean,
I watched a very funny sketch that I really enjoyed that featured the two of you guys working together as a pair of guys obsessed with good luck and hexes, gambling.
Yeah.
And you were basically you had each round of gambling was interspersed with a complex stepping routine.
Right.
In the African American fraternity sense of stepping, like, complicated dance sequences.
Right.
That involved a lot of high fives.
This was at a casino.
This was at a casino.
The, yeah.
And it was very funny. And I also, like, by the time it got to minute four, I was so exhausted watching it.
Oh, gosh. We killed ourselves.
Oh, man. We destroyed ourselves doing that.
Quick, man. We got to make this Tex-Ex now, dog.
Come on, man up, yo.
Man up. Rolling. Keep that good luck rolling. Tex-Ex. We'll break it.
Whoa.
Hello. Scout.
Black 29.
That's what I said.
Yeah.
All I could think was just I was watching you. It was really funny, but all I could think of was you and those just trying to get those teenagers to keep laughing.
Yeah, man. There was some of that. There was certainly a certain amount of, well, let's just put it this way. You know, I didn't know if I was going to be coming back to for a second season. You know, I mean, supporting featured players. You know, you come in and it's already. Tenuous whether or not you're going to come back, you know, Keegan had a real super amazing start as he should have, because he just has, you know, some amazing characters and stuff. So for me, I remember coming to Keegan and saying, dude, I got to write something that can't not get picked here, that they can't not
and, love, that they're idiots if they don't love it. Yeah.
And so Keegan, you know, he's theater, you know, master of theater performing.
Master of Fine Arts.
Master of Fine Arts.
That was horrible.
No.
It's a master's degree in Fine Arts.
I'm glad
you did.
It's
an MFA.
It's just an MFA.
You know, he's used to kind of what I'm used to is just rehearsing, really getting something down
long and hard. Yeah.
And that was something that we knew that if we presented it at the table, everyone would be thrilled. And you have to pick that sketch.
Wait, did you dance at the table read?
At the table read. Yes, oh, yeah, at the pitch. At the table read, we did the whole scene.
That's what, that was the it. Dancing. It was like, I think it was – we said, you know, dude, we have to do something where we get up and dance. We have to
– Yeah. And you were – for some reason at that time, you were very interested in step dancing, which was something –
Oh, it was because of the –
It was before Stomp the Yard came out.
Because it's very interesting.
Well, yeah, it is. I mean, it's something I've been fascinated by, but I didn't go to...
I mean, that's like asking, why are you interested in clown dancing?
Right.
It's the most fascinating thing.
It's the most amazing thing in history.
Right, yeah.
Oh, my God. It's
an amazing form of dance where people wear clown makeup.
And just go crazy. Yeah, no, you can't.
Why
really
wouldn't you be interested in that?
Well, that's the other little cheat. And, you know, that's what we do. We really try to ensure ourselves for a certain amount of success.
Yeah.
And that's the cheat there. We know it's something we could pull off. And we know that watching step dancing is just inspiring, amazing. It fills you with something special. So we know... If we can do that and get a laugh, boom. This is a sketch that's, you know, it's got legs.
Jordan, was part of your concern when you were trying to figure out a sketch to do with Keegan that was un-you-droppable, un-you-fireable?
Yeah.
Was part of your concern that if you didn't make something that was dynamite that had Keegan in it, that Keegan was going to be the black guy?
Certainly there was a part of that. I mean, we had Ari Spears, Keegan, myself. We were all and Danielle Gaither. So that was four black people. And in my calculation, that was way too many for a sketch show on television. So yes, that.
Well, we should explain that you're racist.
I'm a racist to my core.
Super racist.
So as far as I'm concerned, no.
Yeah.
That is unacceptable. I figured that how long can this last? Really?
You're going to have a show with four black people on it? You're really going to do that?
And so I latched on to him. I also, wrote something with Nicole Parker,
hilarious.
A very hilarious a white friend of ours. I didn't write that with Keegan specifically because he was black. But moreover, because he and Nicole had very much congealed themselves on the show just through their talent, and I think my writing style is very offbeat, and so when I would throw a lot of sketches at them and just wouldn't make it past the first level.
They'd just say that's weird.
They would say that's weird. That's off. You know, I would. You know,
I'm sorry. There's no Nicole Scherzinger content in that sketch.
Exactly. Exactly.
I think I'm getting the time period correct.
If not, you're maybe a year off.
Right.
But no, whoever it was, there's no Justin Guarini in this sketch.
Yeah.
This is when I first got there. But so that working with these two guys, those two people specifically, were people that I knew were on the same page as me.
Yeah.
We could do something that was actually great, valid, funny, but would also satisfy what Mad TV needed as far as a spectacle of some sort.
At the same, yeah, and I feel, and here, when those sketches would, remember the Hey Nani Nani when you had the like the woodland animals around you. Like, so he's did this pitch of this sketch, and of course, you know, there's this table with like, you know, 26 people around it, me and four writers losing our minds, but the EPs. Harumph. You know what I mean? Just it's like we're
it's like a sort of David Cross E type.
Yes.
We should explain that one of the things that was unusual, that was different about Mad TV relative to, say, Saturday Night Live, is that part of the people, one of the groups of people that was deciding what sketches got onto the air was non-creative people. So Saturday Night Live, yes. It's ultimately the head writers and Lorne Michaels who are deciding what sketches get onto the air.
Correct.
On Mad TV, a significant portion of who's deciding what sketches get onto the air is Fox executives.
Well,
or non-creative executives, correct?
I don't know that I could completely lump what you may have not liked about the show on Fox.
Okay.
Let's put it that
the
way.
The folks right. that worked... Okay.
We had showrunners
right.
who were terribly creative people.
Oh, uh-huh. Yes.
Yeah, wonderfully creative people. And
we have some producers who were really the glue that made it work at all. It did work as far as certainly, you know, the people creating the show.
But they were doing the same thing you were doing. Mm-hmm. Which, by the way, this is all like relative. This is all a revelation to me. It never occurred to me that he wasn't going to be on the show the next season. It just never occurred to me that he wouldn't be there. And I thought, what a great thing. There's four black people on this sketch show. Take that, Saturday Night Live.
You should explain that you're reverse racist. You're racist against non-black people.
I'm racist against non-black people.
It's Bullseye. I'm Jesse Thorne. My guests are Keegan-Michael Key and Jordan Peele. They star in the new Comedy Central show, Key and Peele. In this clip, Keegan and Jordan are heckling a movie in an unusual way, and a fellow audience member reacts in an even more unusual way.
Mm-mm.
Oh, this is one of our...
Come on, man. What you doing, man? That's stupid. That's stupid, man. Don't do that, man. Come on.
Are you kidding me?
Come on, man. Don't go in there. Do not go into a crane shot right now. You kidding me?
Yeah, man. Hell, yo, this movie's got an inconsistent visual language.
Half the time, this just shooting all handheld like you're a Dogma filmmaker. That's funny, since Dogma clearly forbids temporal and geographical alienation.
Oh, I love that shot the first time when it was in Nosferatu.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, this trying to do some homage to the German Expressionists or some.
It's a visual medium, man. Enough with this My Dinner with Andre.
I mean, has this dude even heard of mise en scène? Put some information up in the frame.
Oh, I get it, yeah. I'm an overexposed mm-hmm, to film. Mm-hmm, getting a ferial look. Man, this.
Can we just go?
Hold on, hon. I mean, they're actually making good points.
On your show, it really is your voice shining through. That must be, I mean, both very exciting and maybe a little bit scary.
Oh, yeah. It's like, if you don't like something or you're offended or you think it's lackluster or something's arbitrary, it is our doing. That's the thing. Mad TV is easy. There are a million people there. You could blame anybody else but yourself. Anybody you wanted to, you could blame. You could blame booking or anybody. But I mean, it's a little scary. It's our brand and it is our responsibility. Because trust me, if a show didn't work and I were an executive, if I were an executive, I would throw you under the bus too. Because it's your material and you know what I mean? Like, I got to feed my family. I got to keep my job. So it's us. It is us.
Also scary just bearing your soul in that way and putting things out there that you don't know how it's going to be received. Oof. But, you know, part of doing a sketch comedy show, I feel like it's our responsibility if we're going to do a sketch comedy show that we put out things that are scary to us, that make us vulnerable. That to me is the only way. You know, sketch is about pushing the envelope. That's what the art form is to me. You know, nobody wants to see sketch comedy that's the same sketch they've seen time and time again, and or it's just a rehash of that thing. They need it to be, you know, we need to break boundaries. Yeah. So every time you're like, oh, snap, oh, my God, I don't know how this is going to be received, I also feel just the validation then, okay, this is all the greats, all my favorites have felt this. And so hopefully it'll come
out. You know what happened the last time a guy went on Comedy Central with a sketch comedy show and opened himself up, right?
Chappelle.
Right, yes. Right.
I mean, that's a guy who... Yeah.
Theoretically. No, that's what people say.
He, I don't know about went crazy, but he was not happy with how it worked out for him.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean...
No, yeah, yeah.
I guess we...
And I think it was the opening himself up that... I mean, because there's parts of it that he, and I think ultimately what he was unhappy with is that there was parts of it that he had control over and parts of it that he didn't.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is to say, he could make, even though he and Neil Brennan had total control over their show, and I think he was happy with the product that he was making, you know, he ultimately can't control how it's received. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, it is.
No one can control
I guess it
that.
Is easy to sort of paint the brush that, you know, hey, if you ever say no to $50 million, you've lost your mind.
Yeah, it's not.
But he's in some ways, maybe he went sane, you know. I don't know.
That, you know what? That's a really good way of saying it, George. I think, yeah, that's, of course, what the mainstream society in which we live would say. How could you walk away from that? Well, because it was causing my soul damage. That's how I could walk away from that. What's more important, to be who I am in the moment and healthy, or to have $50 million and be miserable? What difference does it make? And I mean, it makes difference. It makes a different difference to different people.
Keegan and I have noticed that there seems to be a huge difference between white college movies and black college
it's
movies.
It's huge, yes. And white college movies are always only about having fun, smoking weed, and stealing mascots.
Right. Yeah. It's all about it. Yeah. Let's drink some beer off of some f***ers.
Yeah, let's get away with date rape. Yeah. Yeah.
And in black college movies, the lead always says this line every time.
I'm gonna go to college.
Toward the beginning of the film, I'm gonna go, as if someone just told him, there's no way you're gonna go to college, man. I'm gonna go. That's the plot of the film, yeah, right there. Right. That this guy's gonna go to college.
And in a white college movie, college is a given. College is a backdrop.
Oh yeah.
It's about how do I get out of college?
That's right. How do I do as little work as possible?
Oh man, I'm sick of this trust fund and my dad being a legacy.
Black college movies, always the same plot.
Yeah.
I might develop a challenging rhythmical extracurricular activity.
Mm-hmm.
That's not going to change the fact that I'm going to stay in college.
It's going to be all right, brother, because ain't nobody going to try to kick you out of college. It's a black college. It's going to be fine.
I don't understand. When is going to be the day that we can have a college movie for black people where we get to act like fools?
I'll tell you this right now. When a black man dresses like a woman in order to live in a sorority house, mm-hmm. we will have reached equality.
That's right. Yes. Well, actually, that movie exists. Big Mama's House 3, starring Sir Martin Lawrence.
It's Bullseye. I'm Jesse Thorne. My guests are Keegan-Michael Key and Jordan Peele. They star in the new Comedy Central program, Key and Peele.
Jordan, can you describe your card game to me?
Okay, well, I have a card game that is, it's tentatively called the Movie Game. And the
this is just a tentative title.
This is the tentative title.
Right.
But it's very descriptive, you'll find.
Have you played this card game before?
I have not.
He has a wife and therefore a life.
Uh-huh.
So you have to be a sort of down and out nerd to come over to my house.
Have you never even created your own card game?
No, I know. I've been really slacking.
What are you doing?
I'm really slacking. I should create my own card game.
Unbelievable.
Am I? It's a card game. It's kind of a board / card game.
Well, there's no board, so
no. I guess there isn't a board. You're right. No, you're right. Yeah, you don't need a board.
Technically not, but you are correct that it's much more complex than a card game.
Right.
There's dice. There's chips.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone has their personal pad.
Yep.
And then there are these actor cards. And I don't want to give away too much, but long story short, you everyone around the table is a Hollywood mogul.
Okay.
We are tasked with making 4 movies before the end of the evening.
Uh-huh.
This usually
takes each person.
Each person.
Each player.
Each player, right.
And it basically, there are these star cards, which come out, and we bid over them to cast them in specific movies. And there are also script cards, which have different subgenres of films on them. The better cast someone is for the specific genre, the more dice they get to roll for their performance, and so on and so on. And the best part is everybody gets to present their movies in the form of a trailer. So it's a creative, interactive role playing gambling experience.
It's really awesome. I know a lot about the game. I've just never actually seen it in practice, which I think would be thrilling.
Yeah, I can tell you would lose your mind. You would love it so much. You would love it so much. You're already losing your mind.
But look at him right there. He just looks titillated.
Like, it's a grimace. It's a grimace of fun. This is so funny. I was telling you about this before, and every step of the way, you burst into laughter.
It's the craziest thing that anyone. We had been talking to each other for like 5 minutes, and you're like, I bet you're a movie fan.
I bet you're into this. I had a feeling. You can tell.
I bet you'd enjoy this. Yeah. I bet you get a kick out of this.
Yeah. You would love it.
Does he do this kind of thing on your television program, Keegan?
He does. Well, this is how he talks during a pitch. Like you say. And then the third reason that the scene would work comedically. I mean, he's got like three or four levels of why he thinks it's funny, and that'll often be before we've gotten to the premise of the scene, which is amazing. I don't know anybody else who does that.
I'm a strategist.
He is.
Heart,
he,
you know.
It's so funny because do you play chess?
Yeah.
Okay, that makes sense to me then. Yeah, he looks at everything in a strategical way. I'm a very impulsive, ephemeral kind of person. I'm more a performer than anything else.
Yeah, his writing is all the time and on his feet and in the form of improvisation and just character observations, like people he knows, you know. So it's great. I mean, you can see, you know, that's one of the reasons he has so much success is you can just have a writer sit down with Keegan and just basically type what he's doing and then put it into some order layer or something. You know?
Well, guys, thank you so much for joining me on Bullseye.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you so much.
Right there. Bullseye.
Got to get you over to play this game. You're going to love it.
You got
to
get over there, Jesse.
Key and Peele is airing now on Comedy Central. You can catch it Tuesday nights. Every week, we close the show with a culture suggestion from yours truly. It's The Outshot. I have about 17 jobs. I host this show. I do a comedy show called Jordan Jesse Go. I write a blog about menswear called Put This On, and we're editing the second season of that blog's web series right now. I'm even a part-time bailiff on the Judge John Hodgman podcast. Oh, and also I have a six-month-old. So, in other words, I have stuff to do. So can anyone explain to me why I have been spending every spare second of my day obsessively gathering flowers and herbs in the made-up world of Skyrim? If you're a gamer, I don't need to tell you what Skyrim is. It's one of the biggest games of the year, probably the best reviewed, maybe the most ambitious. If you're not a gamer, I'll summarize. It's like Dungeons & Dragons, only beautiful and immersive and huge and, oh my God, I want to be playing it right now. I don't even care about video games. I mean, I enjoy video games, but I'm not a video game enthusiast or anything. I usually play four-year-old sports games that I buy used for $6.99 at GameStop. The Skyrim, though. Dang. I'm level 31 right now. I've been focusing on my archery and on my alchemy and also on the alienation of my real-life family and friends. I'm especially good at the last one. If you've ever wanted to slip into a magical world and kill some freaking dragons, there's no time like the present. Seriously, this Skyrim, this thing is amazing. Just don't make any plans for the next few weeks. That's my outshot. Oh, That's it for Bullseye this week. The show is produced by Speaking Into Microphones. Our producer, Julia Smith. Nick White, our editor. Our intern is Joe Molinelli. Our theme music is Huddle Formation by The Go Team. Thanks to The Go Team and their label, Memphis Industries, for letting us use that. You can find us online at MaximumFun.org, on Twitter, at Bullseye, or on Facebook at Facebook.com/Bullseye with Jesse Thorne. And remember, all great radio hosts have a signature sign-off.
Production of Bullseye with Jesse Thorne is supported in part by the menswear blog Put This On, presenting the Put This On Gentlemen's Association. Members receive a handmade pocket handkerchief in the mail every 60 days. More information at putthison.com. And by Ask Metafilter, thousands of life's little questions answered. Online at ask.metafilter.com.
Support for this program comes from this station and Public Radio International stations nationwide and is made possible in part by the PRI Program Fund, whose contributors include the Ford Foundation and the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation.
PRI, Public Radio International.